ons het vir die afgelope 16 jaar Super Strikers uitgebring elke maand. Elke maand 22 page comic.
Oor sokker,
ons het 200 issues en hou die rekord vir most widely printed comic book in the world. Dit is 'n nommer van soos 2 miljoen comics, ons is 200,000 print run per maand wel op sekere tyd gewees. So dit is 'n amazing achievement, maar dit is ook 'n regtig goeie plek vir artists om die skills van comics op te tel en so. Ek werk nou in die animasie departement wat nou die Super Strikers TV series doen. Wat oral wat wêreldwyd basically speel, ook op ETV woensdag. En dit is kind of similar, het ook daai tipe proses van script en scabbing en ek storyboard nou die episodes.
Die punt wat, daar was op 'n stadium boeke uit oor graphic novels and comic art and there's always been the discussion about Striker was always negative because it's people who make it for money, who does it for money. Asof dit is eintlik 'n soort van it's not real. You can't really respect it because it makes a living. So en ek het wel eintlik daarteen rebelleer en sê dit is it's wonderful if someone is gifted to work in comics that you can actually make a living of it. You know, when we were in school dit is nie jy's maar net arm en dwaas. But at least today there is a space for someone. So this is part of jou comics wat jy gedoen het en binne met 'n recurring liefdes tema wat in mengelmoes is. Hier gaan die mannetjie ja, here. En dan
Maan toe
want hy soek vir haar. Heerlikheid. Oké, okay, vertel maar waaroor Mengel moes gaan. Jessie meneer.
ja, so Mengel moes is 'n autobiographical comic about growing up in South Africa. And being autobiographical, it kind of you use real life as basically the start off point for your work. En dan van daar af van die mundane everyday life wat jy uitbeeld werk ek dan ook met die fantasie en die goeders wat mens nie sien nie en things that happen mentally and emotionally and how to hoe om dit uit te beeld en so met hierdie een het ek nou spesifiek half ek mis iemand en hulle voel so ver ek moet maan toe gaan om hulle te gaan
ek vind. Net sê iemand moet my kom uithelp nê want as julle nie hierdie twee se goed visueel kan sien nie dan is dit 'n ramp dan kan ons maar huis toe gaan. Hey, iemand moet my kom help hier. Okay, ek gaan na Luiso. I'm going to introduce you. Luiso Mkhize was born in the town of Butterworth, Gqeberha in South Africa. He completed his studies in graphic design at Cape Peninsula University of Technology in 2009. Then Mkhize worked at Striker, but then left and founded the visual art and communication company Luiso Mkhize Art Limited in 2015. His company produced the South African superhero comic book series Kwezi. And I would invite you to go and see whether you can find it. Where can one buy it?
Exclusive books.
Is it? Yeah, and where does books. One go to there? Do you go to graphic novels or do you go to what?
Well, it differs from each bookstore, each exclusive bookstore, but usually it's in the graphic novel section.
Mkhize has created illustrated artworks for a number of comic book projects and is also a fine artist in his own right. His preferred medium is oil paint on canvas. Now, in Kwezi, you utilize South African indigenous visual material. Mm. How did you arrive on the different the things that you use?
I started off with. I think I'd be lying if I said I started off immediately with that in mind. It started off very, you know, I used what I know from the superhero genre, typically as a template, really. So first illustrations of the actual character, Kwezi, who is a 19-year-old city dweller. I first illustrated him in, you know, spandex and a cape and, you know, the typical superhero look that you would typically get, right? But immediately I figured that wouldn't work, or at least I realized that I was missing out on opportunity, you know, to be telling a supposedly proudly South African superhero story. And that's how I sold the idea, even to myself, that this is like the first proudly South African superhero story. So I felt like I possibly am missing out on opportunity. So, but I didn't want to be dishonest. So the idea was to have Kwezi, who is the central character, the main protagonist, as a typical guy, just like myself. I'm not wearing any traditional regalia right now. I'm just a, you know, in the 21st century South Africa. But, you know, the device then was to use his companions, who is Azania, Koi, and Muhao next to him there, to drive the cultural aesthetics, or at least the cultural, you know, landscape that we have in South Africa, which is very rich. So I didn't want to miss out on that opportunity, and I also didn't want to leave it behind. Because it's great, you know, when you go back to Igbua, for instance, Xhosa, for instance, go back and see, you know, Omamapa wearing the, you know, the traditional regalia, and be able to look at that from a different lens and employ, like, your imagination. Oh, wow, what if they were superheroes, man? That would be cool. Like, you know, looking at the stuff that you typically know as this, and then reimagine it was a really a tantalizing opportunity for me.
Now, what is so fantastic is this building. I don't know whether you could see clearly, but there is the guy in Basutu regalia, coming up the building with his horse.
That was actually growing up, 90s kid. Growing up, we used to watch Biker Mice from Mars. You remember that? So they had these cool bikes that would just ride up buildings and all sorts of stuff. And I couldn't resist borrowing that from Biker Mice from Mars. I used to think that was the coolest thing ever. To have bikes that could, like, you know, ride on any surface in whatever direction. That was really cool. So I borrowed that. And I mean, again, like, I think, I don't know if anyone's watched District 9 here. I think that was like the biggest like deciding point for me, because I always had the idea to do a superhero here, right? But watching that movie and seeing how, you know, they literally just flipped everything we know about South Africa and the landscape on its head and just threw, you know, aliens in it, right? So that was cool. And what it says is that, you know, taking what you already know and can typically see in South Africa and just putting it in a very fantastical world, it's like, It's fun, man.
Now, what I find, there's the hole in the wall.
Yeah.
So what he's doing is, what Siska Invisky is doing is, you take the landscape and you make it part, and those color of the huts there, and then the woman with, is it Zulu hat?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
It's just like, so, you know, so these visuals, like, again, I was taking so many opportunities with this. It's like, you know, you'd never imagine just being Izlalin, which is in the, you know, the rural areas. You know, you've got the mud huts, you've got the sheep grazing, and all of a sudden you see this, you know, flying, people flying across the sky. I mean, you just don't get it. And they're wearing, you know, one of them is wearing, you know, Zulu-inspired, you know, regalia, and she's a superhero, right? So that's, I mean, like, you just have so much fun with something like that. Yeah.
I mean, those unbelievable blankets, and then this incredible horse. But there's, look there, goodness me, you have modernized that hat, that Basutu hat.
Complete look at the muscles as well. Can't forget the muscles as well.
And then this blanket, you know, the famous Mealy pattern blanket.
You know, what's amazing about that, actually, and this is where we find some really interesting parallels. I don't know if you've watched Black Panther yet.
So, yeah.
So they've got, like, these
look
characters
there.
In the story.
I was thinking they have stolen from you. Yeah.
It was tragic watching it. I was like, but I mean, it's fine because I also, you know, borrowed this stuff from existing Basutu tribe, right? This is why I think so as well. But it's you know, we're in the business of creating art in this artistic license, and we have to give, you know, breathing space for stuff like that. Especially if I'm also going to say now I am reimagining cultures that I, you know, share a landscape with. It's fair play, I suppose.
Okay. Let me just go back to Willem, dan gaan ek na jou. Willem also uses Cape Town imagery. So here is a guy, he gets into the taxi, of wil jy praat? And
So this is up. So there I'm walking, that's actually an old strike building. so this is just me returning home from work, getting to a taxi, and just a very normal scene of me walking home.
And people usually have somebody waiting for them at home, like a spouse, children, or dog. Me, I've got a mountain.
Yeah, so the way that you can sort of tell something that's quite ordinary, but then the way that you frame it, and it's as soon as you start illustrating something, it starts getting a deeper meaning, and more significance in a way, and laboring on a certain image starts bringing out things which as an artist you would not even initially thought was significant, but then it would sort of take on another meaning, I guess.
Okay, hier is ons huis, nee?
Ja.
Ja, en daar staan ek en John, in die kombuis, en hier is 'n wonderlike scene.
It cuts off right there, dan sê ek alleen by die huis.
Okay, en dan hierdie een is reg aan die begin, John altyd vir Willem skool toe gevat. En dan maar het hulle klein karretjie gery en dan kom hulle laat en dan eendag kom wie? Darth Rider. Hulle help teen die verkeer. Ok. Ek wil net weet by jou, Willem, die verskil tussen 'n comic soos Siske en Wiske en 'n graphic novel. Hoe sien jy dit?
It's basically a question about semantics and kind of what kind of words you use. The history, okay, I don't want to spoil it for everyone, but as far as I know, the history of the graphic novel is basically in the 80s, Mouse came out and The Dark Knight, comics that were obviously not just basic entertainment. They obviously had a much deeper level. Watchmen came out as well. And they had to really think of a different way to kind of market it. And so they thought, well, let's just throw out a comic book, which sounds like literature for kids. It's like, let's call it a graphic novel, which has got like a, which sounds more grandiose, I guess. Yeah. And, that is obviously sort of stuck. So now it's like the kind of thing, like one, if you do a graphic novel, you're actually doing something that's more artistic in a way, and more serious. It's really comics' attempt to sort of present ourselves. I would use the word graphic novel if I'm trying to present myself as, look, I'm doing something serious. This is art. It's not nothing else. So then you kind of use that word. But in terms of the physics of how the comic works, the tools that you use to make the thing, really the same. You use panels, use words, use panel gaps, use layout, use characters.
Do you, Louisa, do you have a staff that's doing the, you know, or do you do everything?
No. Yeah, I could never. I mean, I realized very early that it's a great idea to do it myself, but it's not practical.
Yeah.
So I immediately called a friend. Clyde Beach happens to be a colorist, well, is now an art director at Super Strikers right now. And he's been with me since the beginning. I also, I suppose 2 years, 3 years in, also realized that my writing, though great, was not necessarily amazing. Okay. So so I'm lucky to share spaces with creative people that are
improving this.
Yeah, improving. I mean, you take critiques and you attract people that are better than you at certain things to make for the sake of the actual product itself, right? So Mohale Mashego just joined us on the project for episode 7, 8, and 9. So which has been great because then now we've got like it's a small team, but it's a team of real professionals that are actually putting in real work onto this project, and hopefully it will make it all the better, I think. Yeah.
Daniel Du Plessis, I think of the three of here, you are the most well-known. Eh? This is Jakkals and Jurek and Jakkals. Eh? Daniel Du Plessis studied graphic design at the Tshwane University of Technology and obtained his BTEC cum laude in 2002. He furthered his studies at the University of Stellenbosch and received his master's degree cum laude 2006. The focus of his master's thesis was on analyzing the evolution of popular culture in general, with specific focus on South African visual narratives. Daniel has facilitated design and fine art projects for the University of Stellenbosch, the Open Window School of Visual Communication, the Inkscape Design College, the Tshwane University of Technology, and the University of Pretoria. In 2010, he won a prize in the Fumetto Comic Competition in Lucerne, Switzerland. And ek wil sommer daar begin. Why isn't there a comic competition in South Africa? Okay, Daniel, wat ek net eers daar. Hoe gaan jy te werk om elke Sondag, en elke Sondag is dit iets absoluut besonders. Waar, begin jy al Sondag aand, worry?
Ja, dit is nogal moeilik om, dit is nogal moeilik. Ek dink baie mense wat skryf weet, dit is goed wat altyd in jou agterkop werk, so soms kom idees terwyl jy skool goed was. Dit is nie noodwendig dat jy kan nie nou by die werkstafel sit en nou 'n goeie idee uitdink nie. So dit kom en gaan, maar ek het ook geleer waar die deadline is, dat ek het so bietjie later kan push, want comics vat verskriklik baie tyd. Jy weet, is, vir een mens om al die werk te doen, dis regtig baie moeisaam. So ja, ek is die hele tyd besig om notas te maak oor idees wat ek nog kan doen.
En as jy 'n idee het, kry jy die hele ding van hoe jy hom uitwerk, of dink jy net, ek wil iets doen oor die buitel?
Soms is daar thema's, ek probeer nie my strips, political cartoons te maak nie, en is moeilik om een hele blad, een hele comic oor een stiptelike political of international event te doen. Maar gewoonlik het net een goeie punchline nodig, het een goeie einde aan die comic nodig om die rest te staaf. Ek kan een interessante story vertel, maar die lesers sal altyd wil, of ek dink een goeie comics wat ek geniet, eindig altyd met 'n twist wat jou sal laat terugdink oor wat jy nou net ervaar of gelees het. En dan leer jy ietsie anders, iets wat die strip miskien nie duidelik vir jou stel nie, word gesuggest met 'n goeie punchline.
Nou word die kind en die hond, was dit reg van die begin af, hoe het jy geweet hulle bied soveel moontlikhede? Want is baie belangrik dat jou karakters moontlikhede bied.
Ja, ek is baie lief vir honde en Tintinette vir Snowy. En ek dink honde, daar is nogal baie moontlikhede in mense se liefde vir honde. En ons het baie interessante verhoudings met honde. Dis 'n totaal unieke verhouding wat honde met mense het. En omdat ek die hond toelaat om te praat, gee dit ook ander moontlikhede. Ek is natuurlik ook geïnspireerd deur Calvin en Hobbes. En Calvin se maaikie Hobbes is so eintlik die meer sensible philosophical een, alhoewel Calvin ook filosofies is, maar hy is nogal 'n narcissus. En Charlie Brown en Snoopy ook, dat die hoentjie is of 'n klankbord vir die seentjie. Maar eintlik was dit ook 'n laaste minuut ding. Ek het 'n kans gehad om hierdie strip te doen vir rapport en ek het gedink ek kan dit nie laat gaan nie, en dit op die laaste oomblik het ek gedink daar moet 'n seentjie en 'n hoentjie wees, want dit lei dit self nou nog baie moontlikhede.
Nou, ek weet nie of julle hierdie enigste, maar dat jy 'n gedig soos 'n buiteltjie wat ek nou telke male met studente moes doen, en dan daai ding van dat daai buiteltjie eintlik die aarde kloof en na die aarde se, dis 'n vreeslike tartende visuele ding wat jy dan in taal omskep. En ek het heeltemal ijskoud geword toe ek sien jy doen hierdie ding en daar begin hy. En daar begin hy en daar kan jy sien, hier is die aarde besig om oop te kloof. En jy weet, en op 'n dag sien ek die nag daar aan die kant gaan oop met 'n bars wat van my buitel af dwars deur die sterre loop. Plink, plink, stupid buiteltjie. Dis 'n metafoor jou guard. Nou, hoe, want die hond is bytekeer dom en bytekeer slim. Hoe besluit jy wat moet hierdie hond wees?
Ek hou daarvan om te dink die hond is die beter, honde is ons beter as mense, so ek dink die hond moet eintlik die goeie karakter wees. Ek dink is makliker om 'n hondjie om die mensdom sleg te sê. Ek het ook gedink, skies, ek wil net noem vir daai gedig, ek weet ook nie hoeveel mense is bekend met Afrikaanse woorde en Afrikaanse gedigte. My pa het vir my daai gedig baie keer al gelees. En ek het ook net gedink, as 'n kind nou toevallig die comics sal lees, want toe ek klein was, sal ek in die koerant, eerste ding wat jy doen, is jy gaan lees die comics. En ek het gedink, as daar 'n paar kinders is wat nog nie daai gedig gelees het nie, ten minste het hulle dit ook nou
raak gelees.
Ja.
Ja, ons het, ek weet nie van julle nie, maar ek het groot geword wat comics is eintlik vir dom mense, né? Dis mense wat te lui is om te lees of nie kan lees nie. En comics is gelykgestel aan kyk fotoboekies, né? Ons dis nie. So dit is 'n heeltemal 'n ander ontwikkeling wat julle goddank daaraan bring. En hier is 'n wonderlike politieke komiek hierdie groot mense wat so beklei. Kyk jakkels vol skaalse aapstype. Ek neem aan jy verwys na die vet ou. Mama. Hier is ek, Jorik. Moenie so skreeu nie my kind. Mama, wat beteken white privilege? En is net so ongelooflik, jy loop hierdie kind deur hierdie reuse allee huis, né? Die wit privilege staan net so oral ter oor geskryf eintlik. Behalwe die ma wat in die tuin werk miskien maak.
Dieselfde met daai strip het ek gedink as en ek het agtergekom die lesers van die comic is gewoonlik ouer mense. Dis nie kinders nie. Ek het eers gedink, okay, dis 'n comic strip en dit is kinders wat dit gaan lees en ek dink kinders lees dit ook, maar ek dink die leserskap is meestal ek dink vir peanuts ook. Is die readership is Dis nie kinders, dis nie, dit lyk asof dit vir kinders is, maar dis nie noodwendig vir kinders bedoel nie. Calvin en Hobbes dieselfde. En ek het gedink as 'n paar kinders is wat hierdie comic lees en dan na hulle ouers toe moet gaan en vir hulle moet vra, luister ma, pa, wat is white privilege, sodat hulle die comic strip kan verstaan. Dan word dit ook, jy weet dan moet hulle nou hierdie gesprek hê. Hulle gaan moet praat daaroor en nie om 'n politieke standpunt te neem noodwendig nie, maar net om
hulle woordeskat uitbreiding, ja. Sou ek sê, ja. Ja, okay, hoe, waar kom jy nou aan om die honde so allemaal, kyk al hier, kyk hoe water sy weg en dat hy die haarkies in sy oor. Is daar, voel jy partij keer geconfine dier die twee?
Die sienkie en die hoinkie?
Ja.
Ach, nie noodwendig nie, nee. Ek denk die limits, dis eindelijk ons eindeloose opportunities om verskillende stories te vertel. En daar is ook nie, daar is nie verbonde reels nie, ek is nie besig om my Tintin strip te lees, wat die een bladsy moet opvolg na die volgende bladsy nie, dit is single pages, so, dit is amper soos die Simpsons, waar een karakter kan doodgaan die een week, en die volgende week is die karakter, jy het skielik net weer in die story, so, dit is my chop and change.
Nou, voel jy dat jy kan nog lang aangaan met dit? Of moet een mens nooit so daaraan dink nie, jy dink net volgende Sondag?
Ek het oorspronklik ooreenkoms met die koerant gehad om 8 bladsye te doen, om dit vir 8 weke te toets, want ek dink hulle was nie seker dat dit gaan werk nie, en so kom ons kyk hoe gaan dit. En ek het my alles gegeef vir daai 8 weke, en toe was die redaksie van die opinie, kom ons gaan maar aan, ons kyk hoe lang gaan dit aanhou. En ek het nou hierdie week my 150ste bladsye gedoen, so... ek sal aanhou so lank as wat ek kan, en ek het oorspronklik 8 set idees gehad, het gedink, okay, hierdie is goeie idees, ek kan hierdie, sal ek kan afpoel, en ek het 'n paar ander extra idees gehad, en ek kom achter dat, ek wacht nog steeds vir hulle om my te laat weet, luister, moenie volgende week kom ek instuur nie, want ek het nie 'n contract met hulle nie, maar so ver. Daar kom altyd idees. Ek sal daar's altyd idees. As jy genoeg wag, dan sal daai 'n workable idee opkom.
Nou dikwels wanneer mense 'n column skryf vir 'n koerant, dan en hulle is kreatiewe skrywers, kom hulle agter dat dit vreet al hulle kreatiwiteit op. Jy kan eintlik net daai ding per week doen. En maak nie saak, jy kry so fantastiese idee, maar jy druk om dat jy uiteindelik net daai week kan volmaak. Vind jy dat hierdie jou ander kreatiwiteit opvreet of nie?
Jy meen met ander werk of
ja,
ja, dit vat verskriklik baie denkwerk. Ek het probeer uitvind hoe lank het my vat om 'n bladsy te doen. Willem en Louise, julle sal weet, dit vat baie lank om te maak 'n vol kleur.
Okay, maar give us a how long does a page more or less take?
Like one page.
One page.
My time on for Mingelmus was in the end it was 3 days per page. It was illustrating.
So
planning it out, then drawing it, then colouring it, then putting the text, and then of course like comics are also heavily edit intensive sort of. So the ideal is always like a page a day, but if you're doing it by yourself, that's quite hard.
I think I typically do it as in chunks. So I'd literally illustrate or pencil the entire comic book first. So it's really hard to then tell how long each page would take. I'd suspect maybe 3.5 days for finished page from illustration to fully colored and lettered. But for me, I'd literally just illustrate, pencil it, and then ink it, and then color it, so that there's a consistency with each.
Okay, so en jy teken waar op 'n rekenaar?
Ek teken met 'n dipping pen, 'n speedball dipping pen en ink, en dan skandeer ek die swart en wit kunswerk in en kleur dit digitaal in. Ek dink almal met baie kunstenaars werk eers of so. Maar ek probeer die kleur ook lyk asof dit geverf is. Probeer my bes om met 'n handgemaakte gevoel te gee.
So jy teken dit eers op 'n blaai?
Ja.
En dan scan jy dit. Ja. En jy?
It's pretty digital. When you act full, net digital.
Full on, yeah. Digital. And you?
So it's a quarter is still traditional.
Okay.
And then the rest is digital. Moves. Yeah.
Okay, en hier gaan hy sien Heritage Day, my boy, dis nou Engelse. Biltong en Chakalaka kom proe oor so 5 ure. Doe my lang tatoe, okay. Ek goe. Goe, na. Sharp jurk. Wen nou, okay. Dan sien hy nou allerhande soorte mense. Hallo julle daggarokers. Dan jazz. Ooh, dan kom hy by die wit kinders. En hulle is al uitgepas. Die een lê in sy kots en die ander net. Sy die wit kinders knip 'n uiltjie. Daai ou het te veel erfenis gehad. Sien die mond. Sien jy jakkals? Almal geniet braaidag. Ja, almal behalwe beeste, skape, bokke, varke, hoenders. Wat gebraai is daai dan? Okay. Ja, ek het net grenslose. Ek wil net 'n laaste vraag vir jou vra, Daniel. Bær jy nou hierdie styl net vir hierdie komiek? En doen jy doelbewus ander style as jy iets anders doen, of is dit basically jou styl?
Hierdie styl is eintlik net vir die comic, dis makliker om in te kleur. Omdat dit is amper clear line, dis nie presies tint in
ja.
Of clear line nie, maar ek probeer om nie te veel detail in die swart en wit lynwerk te hê nie, want dit maak die kleur makliker, maar ek dink die kleur is ook treffend. Dit staan meer beter uit in die strip. Hierdie is 'n erfenis dagstrip wat ek gedoen het, en ek probeer ook daadwerklik Suid-Afrikaanse verwysings in die strip inwerk. Want die koerante het 'n keuse om syndicated comics van oorsee te plaas teen 'n prys soos Hagar the Horrible, maar Hagar the Horrible sal waarskynlik verwysings maak na Halloween, wat nie eintlik 'n Suid-Afrikaanse tradisie is nie. So ek probeer die local content soveel as moontlik push om dit te regverdig.
Vreeslike vinnige vraag, kan jy leef hiervan?
Moet jy ander net in volle nie. Nee, dit is besig om dis 'n gereelde inkomste, maar dis nie genoeg om van te eet nie.
Okay. Ek gaan net gou hier is ons het 20 minute oor. 5 minute, 5 minute, 5 minute elk van comics wat jy bewonder. Nou ek wys net hierdie, dan kan jy kies waaroor wil jy praat, Daniel. Daai
Dit is die omslag. Ek sal graag oor hierdie een wil praat. Die tekst is nou nie baie leesbaar nie. Hierdie is 'n Amerikaanse kunstenaar, sy naam is Chris Ware. Dis W-A-R-E. Ek dink hy is een van die min kunstenaars wat uitsluitlik strips kan teken en 'n lewe daaruit maak. Hy het 'n Guardian Boekerprys gewen vir sy een graphic novel. En hierdie bladsy se naam is Big Text. En wat hy doen hier is, wat baie interessant is, is as jy van ver af kyk, dan kan jy sien dit is eintlik een beeld van 'n boom wat langs 'n huis staan. Maar as jy die teks lees, dan sien jy daar seisoene wat verskil. Die eerste paneel is winter, daar's niks blare nie. Ek kan nou nie daai paneeltjie lees nie. Maar in die eerste paneeltjie is daar speech bubble, die tweede een is daar speech bubble en net onder kan jy sien 'n graaf en iemand die punt van iemand se hoed steek uit. En dan is dit Big Tex wat in so 'n southern accent vir sy ma en pa sê, hy het nou vir hulle blommetjies gebring en hy hoop dit is genoeg goed met hulle. In die volgende paneel in die hoekie bo sien jy die huis is vervalle. En as jy dan weer onder amper in die middel bo kom, sien jy daar's twee grafte. So dan besef jy dit was Big Tex wat vir sy ma en pa op hulle begrawe het. En die pa se graf is 'n bietjie varser as die ma se. In die volgende paneel is sy ma sieklik in die bed, dan is daar 'n prentjie middel links waar 'n voeltjies in die boom sit en dan middel onder skiet Tex een van die voeltjies in die boom dood. En hy's vreeslik trots daarop en hy sê vir sy pa: "Pa, ek het een van daai voeltjies doodgeskiet." En sy pa sê vir hom: "Ja, dis regte man se werk. Geef vir my 'n paar skote." En dan in die onderste tweede onderste reël sien jy Tex is besig om een van die bome se takke af te saag om 'n vuurtjie te maak, want in die vorige paneel het sy pa vir hom gevra om 'n bietjie hout te gaan haal. En in die onderhoekie sien kom sy pa agter en hy vra hom: "Waar het jy die hout gekry?" En dan begin hy hom net slaan en slaan. En in die onderste paneel sien jy die boompie is nog baie klein. En dan sê die pa vir die ma wie toe nog lewe: "Ag, kyk julle, dis so oulik. Big Tex het 'n boom geplant." En dan sê sy pa: "Ek seker reg gaan opeindig om 'n baie slim seun te wees eendag as hy groot is." Wat natuurlik nie waar is nie, as jy die res van die komiek lees. Maar wat interessant is, is dit breek 'n tydstip op. Die boom is klein onder en hy word groter en dis uniek aan comics. Jy kan dit nie in 'n film doen, dink ek, of in 'n animasie of in 'n jy kan dit in 'n storie skryf. Maar comics is uniek in dat jy so vir 'n leser tyd en space terselfdertyd kan opbreek en daar word baie vir die leser oorgelaat om al die puzzelstukkies bymekaar te maak. So comics het vreeslik baie opportunities en potential vir ander maniere om stories te vertel.
Hierdie vind ek verskriklik. Ek sien dit altyd dan en wonder ek moet ek dit koop.
Ja, jy moet.
Dit is baie harige bene. Ek vind dit baie problematies, maar goed. Jy sê, hulle sê hier alles is in the first book of the Bible graphically depicted, nothing left out. Nou stuur jy vir my die, kyk hier is al hier, the chieftain man, the chieftain Omar, the chieftain Zebu. So hulle teken al daai Bybelse mense.
Ja, in die boek van Genesis is daar genealogies en Robert Crumb het elke enige siggie gaan gee. En ek dink hy het na ou Charlton Heston Bybelse movies gekyk om verwysing te kry. Maar dis 'n ongelooflike stuk werk en hulle het hom verskriklik baie geld gegee om hierdie boek te teken. En hy sê underground comics artist, as jy gaan oplees oor Robert Crumb en jy's 'n sensitiewe leser, gaan jy baie groot skrik vir die goed wat hy gedoen het al. So vir hom om die Book of Genesis te teken is 'n baie eienaardige kunstenaar om na te gaan, maar hy het dit ongelooflik goed gedoen en hy het stiptelik by die boek gehou. Hy het dit nie gaan satirize of exaggerate nie.
Okay, wat sê gou net hier?
Hierdie is twee Argentynse comic kunstenaars, Munoz en Sampaio. Hulle het 'n baie groot indruk op my gemaak. Jy kan sien hulle kunswerk, die kunswerk skryf soveel soos die woorde. Die manier wat die gesigte geteken is, het so groot impak. Dat jy kan sonder om die woorde te lees of weet jy wat se soort wêreld hierdie karakters inwoon. Dis net nog 'n kunstenaar wat ek sal onbeveel.
Ja, maar kyk hy twee vingers wat hy so met sy neus gehad het. Dopo. Okay. Willem, ek het maar jy het nou jou eie
Ek dink nee, laat ek net ek dink almal ken vir Calvin Hobbes. En soos Daniel ook gesê het, dis een van daai iconic comics wat ons het so geïnspireer toe ons kinders was. En wat ek net wil uitlig oor Calvin en Hobbes is like hoe hoe bepalend die formaat van die comic was op die ouend met die content. So Bill Watterson het op die ouend 'n strippie gehad in die koerant. Hy het vier panele, let's go.
En ek weet nog, ek's altyd amazed hoe hy al daai konsep, okay, kom ons vat 'n seentjie, ons gee hom 'n imaginary tiger friend that comes alive at some point and then at other point it's just a teddy bear. En dan nog 'n sterk filosofiese undertone tot die hele ding, omdat hy doen daai comic en hy doen dit in 4 panels. En hoe hy dan basically formulas gebruik soos gags, wordplay, visuals, secret truisms en so voort. So hierdie hy begin met hierdie 4 paneel hierdie the 4 panel format which he did weekly or daily. En kan sien dit is super simpel geteken. It's very basic, it's very clean, it's extremely crisp and easy to understand. But don't let that fool you that there is an underlying intelligentie en 'n filosofie onder this very kind of clean line work that he was using. And so what I want to say daaroor is like using that format to in the end tell something very very complex. So het begin met hierdie 4 panel goedjies en dan het hy soos wat ons behoort te weet soet van dit begin serialise. Elke 4 enetjie wat nou elke dag se uitkom sou dan het hy begin dit te serialise. So dit sou dan aanpas tot 'n groter storie. So hy het nou hierdie 4 blokkies gebruik om dan begin groter stories te vertel. Jy weet waar Calvin uit skool uitsneek en jy weet gaan goeie gaan doen en dan vang sy maal hom en so voort. So hy het die hele universe begin expand nog steeds net met daai klein formaat. Toe met die sukses, ek weet nie van die kleer een is hier so is nie.
Net so.
Is daar nog nie. Toe met die kleer een is hy het die groot bladsye gedoen, het hulle meer spasie gekry binne dit, maar hy het nog steeds daai tipe formule gevolg. Jy weet van jy's buite Calvin dan gaan jy in sy imagination in en wat so lekker is in Calvin Lamb jy lees is o, is 'n seentjie en sy dier, en dan sy dinosaurs, of dan sy in space, en altyd nie ligtelike themas nie, altyd soort van nette truisms wat hy explore het, en relatability en so. En, dis wat ons al weet van Bill Watterson, hy het hom so gepressure om Calvin Hobbes te serialise, en om nie serialise, maar om movies van het te maak, om merchandise te maak, hy het so gefight, hy het op die eind opgehou, om Calvin Hobbes te maak, he stopped doing it, because the pressure on him to spend it is an immensely popular strip. Maar wat vir my deesdae inspireer is, hoe hy as a comic artist hierdie formaat gevat het, en die klein spasie gebruik het, om an amazing wereld en a karakter te skep, wat letterlijk ondupliseerbaar is. Jy sal nie die, Calvin Hobbes is die comic, dit is nie 'n ander ding nie, dis nie 'n movie nie, dis net daai ding en hoe hy daai formaat gebruik het. En soos ons nou praat oor koerante en waar ons as comic artists where we find our next platform, where at some point like how we looking and like looking at Bill Watterson, how he sort of in a very genius way used the platform that was given to do the most with. So that's challenging. That's like what I'm challenging myself. Like, what's my platform as technology and things are changing, and how can I use that and never to feel like limited by limited space? That like you can still use that if you know what you're doing.
Okay, Rizzo, just talk a bit about what inspires you.
Inspires. Okay, I suppose when it comes to the comic books that I make, very technically, I came across, while working at Stryker, I came across an artist by the name of Frank Whiteley. And I think that particular illustrator was a huge catalyst with how I approached just the method of creating images and how to work the composition functionally. And then to tell a story. I mean, he was very, I suppose I just like the elegant way in which he does it. I mean, I'm a realist painter, so I always default to creating characters that look realistic, mm-hmm. right? But there's also subtleties with that. There's a skill with being able to take a character and portray their emotions from panel to panel, whatever they're encountering, right? And a lot of For the longest time, particularly with superhero comic books, you wouldn't get that. So you'd get action, you know, You think of Jim Lee, for instance, and how the characters are always, you know, their eyes are always like that. And even if they're having just a conversation, there's always this, like, you know, this... they always have permanent scowl.
Give me some
coffee. Yeah. They always have this permanent scowl, and I always found that he had a very elegant way, particularly Frank Quitely, with Grant Morrison, with particularly All-Star Superman, which is a comic book that I really enjoyed. The Authority, and quite recently, Jupiter's Legacy. I really enjoyed with Mark Miller, the way that they treat the characters. They become very realistic. I mean, these are characters that are illustrated really well. The line work is impeccable, and the treatment between the skin and the clothing and drapery. And then you have this coloring style, which is completely unrealistic in a way. It's really flat and washed out. I really, for the most part, I really enjoyed that. The fact that technically, for me, where I am in the work that I do, I find that guy to be quite a huge inspiration. Also, Sarah Pichelli. I don't know, if you know Sarah Pichelli, does Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales story.
Yeah.
So she's really good. Yeah. She's all the way in the States. I usually don't like how characters. How a lot of illustrators depict particularly African American or African characters. It's always something missing. Mm. Like it's always like I know a lot of guys. They don't look like that. Maybe it's the shape of the chin or the cheekbones and how facially characters work or just how they would typically behave in an environment. So I find her work quite cool. Interestingly, she's not African American, but she does a good job.
Okay.
Also, finally, I think what inspires me beyond the aesthetics or comic books is just popular culture. I like getting out of my own space and then just going out on the street and maybe go out and meet people and. That there's something there. There's something that just invigorates or just pushes me to go back to do the work because that's who I'm telling the story to, right? So, yeah.
Okay, we have 5 minutes. I'm going to put a question to you all three. I was in Holland and there was a man who said he doesn't understand the Flemish as huge stripper book buyers. Comic book buyers, and the Dutch not. Same language. So why is it? Why do they buy it in Flanders, and why not in Holland? And he then approached several publishers in Holland. First, the bookshops, and the bookshop said, "We don't know where to put the comics. You know, we can't put it with Kefi because it's not Tintin. But then, what is it?" So he designed a bookshelf. And said, okay, I've got 8 publishers, they all publish different kinds of comics, and we want to sell, we want to drive it. So I never got to find out what the effect of that was. But how do you find the market and the bookshops in terms of buying comics and stripper and graphic novels? You begin, Anand, Louise and Anand.
Ek het een keer in exclusive books gewerk en ek het 'n kopie van Maus verkoop aan 'n vrou en ek was vertroud met Maus. Dit gaan oor die Holocaust en ek het vir haar genoem toe sy dit koop. Ah, dit is 'n baie goeie comic. Ek hou baie daarvan en sy het my geskel en gesê ek sal dit nie 'n comic noem nie. En ek het gedink, okay, dit klink miskien soos 'n verkeerde woord, maar mense het 'n vooroordeel teenoor die woord comics, dink ek. Maar ek dink ook in die 70s was die Tintin reeks geserialiseer in rapport in 'n volkleur agterblad en dit het amper so al weggegaan. So ek dink dat daar nie 'n baie sterk kultuur van comics is voordat jy selfs by 'n boekwinkel inloop om comics te lees nie. Mense het vooroordele. So ek is ook bly dat dat rapport 'n volkleur comic op die agterblad run net om 'n bietjie daai kultuur aan te wekker of die vlammetjies so 'n bietjie aan die gang te hou. om mense net te kry. Ek dink ek is nie seker nie. Ek weet nie hoe antwoord dit.
Nee, ek dink dat daar is 'n probleem en ek dink mense moet begin om dit dieper te kyk en te koop.
Is the question, the question more towards is, publishing? Or
yeah, do you find it, I mean, you had to publish it by yourself because no one else wanted to,
yeah.
And so did you.
Yeah.
So, and where do you find it easy to sell? Is it it's selling well, obviously?
Increasingly it gets easier, I suppose, but in the beginning it was completely like so self-published. So, you know, I have to tell my wife that, sorry, I have to spend 5,000 Rand on printing a comic book that might sell. So that was the reality for quite a while. But
did you find that bookshops were taking it easily?
So they were, but we were very small scale. So I'm talking like really small bookshops. We'd even take it. So I didn't have a template to work with. So I made a lot of crazy and amazing mistakes at the same time. So I didn't only take it to bookshops. I'd take it to concept stores, clothing stores as well. So because the character, you know, it's consistent with the character. He's a young kid from the city, and so he'd obviously, you know. So we experimented. I mean, for the most part, it was a lot of guerrilla marketing. You know, I'd stop people that are celebrities and give them a book. And say, hey, can you post for with a selfie? I'll post it up, and then you start to develop that following on Instagram, on Facebook, Twitter, whatever. And that's how we actually started off. Was this a really robust and really just like relentless, pushing and marketing of this thing? Because I understood that number one, from the onset, people aren't warm to South African superhero comic books. In any case, for the larger part, you know, we're a very small pocket of people read comics and enjoy comics. Like the culture just isn't as strong here. So to cultivate that, you know, there's a couple of beats that you need to make sure that you hit. So 2 years later, having stopped all sorts of people, I mean, there was a time we even bombarded. so many people. I remember Mandla Mandela was at the kitchen in Woodstock. He's busy having his breakfast there, and I was about
to go into the office. It's now Mandela's grandson.
You know, yeah, that's right. So and I was like, there's no way I'm going to pass up this opportunity, right? I just got off the taxi. I had the copies of Quizzy in my bag. So I literally went in there. I didn't have a buck to my name, but I had enough to buy a cappuccino. So I waited, like really waited, just sipping this coffee. I was like, this guy has got to see this book. I don't know what's going to come of it. And indeed, nothing came of it, but I gave him the book and he loved it, right? And I took a picture with him and I posted it, and people were like, oh, wow, this is so cool. This must mean this is really good.
Okay.
If he's reading it.
Yeah.
Right? So the beginning of Quasi was colored with a lot of that, just like really just pushing it. And then when I realized, okay, I can't keep doing this and just spending so much money and just not getting as many things, there's only so many comic cons that we've got in Cape Town in South Africa. There's only so many book festivals, right? So, I just felt like I wanted it to be as big. I felt like it was deserving to be as big as Super Strikers, for instance, right?
Exactly.
So I did the whole crazy thing of calling bookstores, like the major book retailers, right, and not realizing that you actually have to go through a publisher first. So I called Bianca. Bianca, right? Dushanka, where is she? Yeah. So my publisher's here. And that's how I met her. I called Bianca from Budget, you know, what's this? Bargain Books. There we go. And she was like, I called her up and I was like, listen, I've got this book. You guys need to have it on your shelves. I think you're going to love it. It's a superhero story. I had no bearing of what is actually what to do and what not to do. So she gently, bless her, man, she gently directed me towards Dushanka, who I then subsequently met, and then we did the whole exclusive books, and, you know, the book flew. It's amazing, and it teaches you a lesson, because in between you and the end user, I mean, the person who's going to read and enjoy the book, is so many things that get in your way. And it's such an upheaval to actually get through that mill, just to get to the person who says, oh, geez, well, where's this where thing been? This?
Yeah, you after you've drawn the whole book, you have to go. I saw William Kentridge at the Goodman Gallery, and I didn't do anything. I just froze up, and I was like, I'm going to steal that idea. I'm just going to keep comics on me.
Yeah.
It's weird for me. It's like I always find when I give someone a comic or whatever, there's always like this sort of like, and I think people are intimidated, and it's like it's a comics. It's like, but I don't know where to start. Like I don't know where to begin, and it's kind of like, well, everyone learned how to read, you know, and how to read a book and how to. And comics is the same thing. It takes investment. It takes investment from people, and it's kind of disheartening. I think we've, I don't know if it's an Anglo-Saxon culture. When I went to London, it was like the same. It was the same there, really. It's like comics are for kids and grown-ups don't read it. When you go to France, it's seen as, it's called the ninth art. You know, Bande dessinée, like they've got the unique name specifically for comics. Like, if you go to a small town, they've got their comic artists, you know, like specifically, hey, like this is our team of comic artists. So there's a, and I think it's easy to kind of to get disheartened by it and so on and so forth. But I think, as Louisa just pointed out, the challenge for artists is to, at the moment, to find these new avenues, and especially with how technology and things are changing. So how can we keep on making these things? Because making comics is an incredibly rewarding thing to do. And we'll keep on making it if people notice or not. And there's this wealth of work that people aren't aware of that's there, and you just have to go pick it up, really, and you just have to put the time in and become a comic reader.
Ek hoor hulle het verlede jaar amper 'n miljoen boeke verkoop hier. Toe ek het vir my familie sê, ma, ons weet jy's nie goed met syfers nie, dit kan nie dit wees nie. Ek het nou by Elmarie gecheck, dit was amper 'n miljoen boeke. So dit is miskien, so terwyl mens nou die boeken koop, is dit toch raadsam om een paar comics in te slip, denk ek. Baie, baie dankie. Baie dankie aan julle drie. Thank you very much.